You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the At the Hive podcast, part of the SB Nation network of podcasts. On today's episode, we recap a wild weekend of Hornets buzzer beaters. Talk about Nicholas Batum's return to the lineup, the young players he's taking minutes from, who's buzzing and who's wasn't, and look ahead to the games in the next week. Let's get started.
What a weekend of Charlotte Hornets basketball before the Raptors had to go and ruin it. But we're not going to talk about that yet. We're going to start. Well, first of all, welcome to the At the Hive podcast. I'm Jonathan DeLong, like always. And as always, I'm joined by Zach Brown. Zach, how much fun was Friday and Saturday night as a Hornets fan?
It was fantastic, except for the fact that we had to play basketball after that. How much blame do you think we take for the Raptors loss because we delayed recording the podcast? Is it 100%, 90%? What do you think?
98%, because behind the scenes, we were going to record on Sunday, so this episode would come out with no damper from the Raptors game, but I was lazy and pushed it back, and then this is what I get, is the Hornets lose by 36 points, and it just completely throws a wrench into all the excitement about the buzzer beaters from young guys. So sorry, everybody.
And you know me, I love throwing a wrench in the excitement, because we were getting, there was a little bit too much swagger in everybody's voices about all these buzzer beaters and how fun it is to watch the Hornets, and Hornets are like the cool guys to watch nowadays. You guys just keep watching the Suns, NBA Twitter, keep talking about the Grizzlies. Keep your hands off the Hornets. We got the Hornets corner over here.
Yeah, we'll talk about it later, but actually getting some sort of like national recognition to an extent, and the rumblings of like, are we going to do this? And then it's just like, oh yeah, no, Raptors. This is a good team.
SB Nation, our corporate overlords, wrote a piece about how fun it is to watch a Hornet. Stop watching the Hornets.
I mean,
that's our job.
I don't mind I like the attention to an extent, but it's like, it does feel like there's a point where it's going to be like, hey guys, remember we thought the Hornets weren't terrible? Now everybody point and laugh because they actually are terrible. Just like always.
Yeah, and they are terrible. They are in a rebuilding process, and you're going to get amazing nail-biter wins like we saw on Friday and Saturday, and then you're going to get the 40-point loss against the reigning champions of the NBA in the Toronto Raptors that we saw on Monday. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I don't like to be a damper, which I feel like we are at points in this. But it's just it's a matter of being realistic. Like, the Hornets are what, they're 6-8 now. Four of the six wins have been by one possession, and one of the ones that was not a one possession win was only a 6-point win because the Warriors fouled for no reason with like 2 seconds left.
Right.
So it's basically like down to the wire in 5 of the 6 wins, and none of them are against good teams. The only good team is the Pacers, but that took overtime and they're missing 2 of their best players.
Right.
So, yeah, I do think the wins and losses are overstating how good this Hornets team is, and that's not to rain on the parade and that's not to be a Debbie Downer, but I think it's a picture and see that the Hornets are getting outscored by a massive margin over the course of the season, and the wins and losses are eventually going to even out to that.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean you can't be excited. That doesn't mean you can't love the Devontae Graham buzzer beater. You can't love it when Terry Rozier goes off for 33 points against the Grizzlies, although that was a close loss. It's still fun to watch this team. I get it. But we're in a generation of the Charlotte Hornets that it's going to be a losing season. We're going through a rebuilding process. And what's going to happen is we're catching the people that we win against off guard, because we were supposed to be a train wreck. We were supposed to be a trash fire. And it's not as much of a trash fire as people have thought, because of the likes of Miles Bridges and PJ Washington. And you know what's going to happen, Jonathan?
What?
Next year, we're not going to have those nail-biter winners, because they're going to be prepared for our PJ Washingtons, our Miles Bridges, our Devontae Grahams. And you saw this in the iteration of the Kemba Walker Charlotte Hornets, where we would have a winning season, we would get to the first round of the playoffs that season, and then the next season, they wouldn't be shocked when they would come into Charlotte or host the Hornets away, and they would know exactly how to play it so that they would double-team Walker, and then someone would have to hit an outside shot, and then you have Nick Batum giving the ball away. It's just, we're in iterations of this thing, and you just have to let them grow. And I'm excited that people are happy watching them, but you have to know where this team is, where this franchise is.
Yeah, I do like that people are kind of buying in to the excitement about it. It's just that, and I totally agree with you that I every game I watch, like, I hope the Hornets pull this game out. I hope they win this game. No, they won't. So there's nothing wrong with rooting for wins and stuff like that. There has to be an expectation, or that's not going to always be the case. Especially because the Hornets have faced one of, if not the easiest schedule in the league so far. I'm scrolling ahead, and like starting in January, they play 9 straight games against teams that are currently in the playoffs. Like that's going to be tough.
Yeah, that's a tough run. And speaking of expectations, your favorite player came back.
Oh, he is
Nicholas Batum, your favorite player of all time. And, doing what he does best, kind of nothing. What do you think of Nicholas Batum coming back?
He's doing exactly what I think should have been expected of him pretty much since we signed him. We being the Hornets, because I have so much decision-making power. He's not shooting, which is fine, because there are times he passes up too many open he's not shooting. He passes up open shots that he should take, but it feels like it's not killing the offense like it did before when we were expecting him to take shots that Kemba Walker wasn't. Now it's like, hey, Nick, just like play defense and make good passes. And he's like, all right, thank you. That's all I've been wanting to do. So I thought he's played well in the 2 games he's been back. Not to say there aren't issues, but I think he's, for himself as an individual, I think he's been fine.
I disagree. I think he's been playing really bad.
Oh, do you?
If you're a shooting guard and you're not taking the open shots or the shots that the team expects you to try to shoot, that's a problem no matter what. I get that he is in the flow of the offense, he's getting the assists that you want. Lord knows we needed somebody to rebound, and he is actually getting those rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't put in a drawer that he is a $20 million man, that he is a weight on the salary. And you know me, I'm thinking about, hey, what's the trade value of Nicholas Batum? And if you can't hit the open shots, if you can't hit the shots you're expected to shoot, or even take them, no one is coming to get you. There is no trade value there. And, you know, we're 2 games in. It may change. But from what I've seen, if, when Cody Martin does it, I'm like, oh, wow, look at it. But this is not Cody Martin. This is Nicholas Batum, who, you know, we've been saddled with for 4 years. I know you don't like that idea of him, but that's, you know,
I want
to see him be better, and I want to see him take the open shots. What do you have to lose at this point?
So the only issue I have with Nick is one, the open shots, obviously, because I know in the Toronto game in particular, there were times where he caught it and he was wide open and he waited for someone to come at him so he could pass it. And it's like, it's okay to shoot, Nick. Like, you can facilitate and shoot. The two aren't mutually exclusive. The only issue I have is I think he's playing too much right now. And I know you probably agree with that.
I do agree with it. I know the person that you want to play in replace of him, and I'm not sure. you want Cody Martin to play, right?
Well, so the version of Nicholas Batum we're getting right now is very almost the exact same player as Cody Martin. He's like an experienced version of Cody Martin that plays not as hard. You know, you substitute some veteran savvy in favor of less energy. But, like, looking at their stat lines and stuff, like, Nicholas Batum took 4 shots and he had 6 rebounds and 4 assists against the Raptors. And that's pretty much what Cody Martin does. He just doesn't shoot. He plays good defense. He gets rebounds. He moves the ball. And it's like, if you're going to get that from someone and you're not expecting to win games, you might as well get it from the rookie just to see what he can grow into.
I get your stance on that. I think that Nicholas Batum is way better than Cody Martin, actually. They're not the same
right
person
now, yeah.
Because you have a small sample size with Cody Martin. You, if you're Borrega, you want to rely on that veteran savvy, that experience that he has. And I think that in the long run, you're going to see a better stat line from Nick Batum than you will from Cody Martin this year, for certain.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just the amount. Like, Cody Martin went down to 2 minutes and then he didn't get until garbage time against the Raptors, while Nick played 29 and 25 minutes in the two games. Like, he's almost leading the team in minutes these two games since he's been back.
And if I am Kupchak and I'm talking to Borrega, I want him to have the minutes because I want him to show some type of usefulness to some team in this league. I mean, you know, if we're thinking about it on that level. But I agree with you. I think that Cody Martin has suffered since Nick Batum has come back, but I think you're in store for it for a while.
No, I get that. And I kind of hope, I understand also from Borrega's perspective, he likes having a veteran out there because Batum, for all of his flaws, does kind of help things connect better. Like, the offense moves a little bit better. The defense seems to be more cohesive. So I understand from a coach's perspective that you like that. And I understand from a front office perspective, you want him to show that he does those things so somebody might actually want him or at least be willing to take him without making us pay anything for it. But as a fan, like, watching an individual game by game basis, it's like, I've got enough of this. I know what I'm getting here. I want something new and exciting.
I can understand that feeling, but looking at it from a strategic franchise perspective, you want Nicholas Batum to have some type of value because Cody Martin's contract is not going to bring anything. Nicholas Batum, especially with that 1 year on it, you know, they can let him go after this year. That's a trade chip if he is at all serviceable.
Yeah, but Cody Martin's not the only person who's losing out to minutes right now. Dwayne Bacon sat out with swelling in his knee and has not played real, like, he played in the garbage time against the Raptors, but doesn't count. He has not played meaningful minutes since then. Thoughts?
Yeah, do you think you owe him money because you've been on Bacon train for so long?
Like
James, he wasn't playing well. He wasn't hitting the shot. He's in there for the offensive, to inject some offensive energy, and he hasn't been hitting those shots. And if you don't hit the shots, you don't get playing time. Is it just as black as white and white as that?
I think that's what it is. Well, first of all, are you asking if I owe him money? Because like, the front office listened to us talk about him and were like, wow, you know what? They're right. He's not very good.
Obviously, the scouting is definitely the start with the small podcasts.
Yeah.
And then you go to the play, you know, going to obviously play.
You check the podcasts of the vlogs. You check Twitter just to see if there's anything that slipped through the cracks that you might not have noticed. And then you go from there. But for Dwayne Bacon, and we talked about it, we talked about it a good bit. At the surface, he offers nothing as a defender. He offers nothing on the boards, or nothing as a passer. Just flat out.
Yeah, to say he offers nothing as a defender gives him a little credit because he's the opposite.
He's a minus.
Yeah, other people have to defend his guy. Yeah.
So so that basically leaves scoring, which is important, but he's not doing that well. He's shooting less than 35% from the field, less than 28% from three, and less than 70% from the free throw line. So he's bad at the one thing he's allegedly maybe supposed to be good at. I don't know how you play that. I don't know how you play him like that.
You can't play him like that. And again, I go back to the beginning of the season when we were talking about the interest in Dwayne Bacon and the expectation of Dwayne Bacon was way too high. This person is a 12th man on a team, on a mediocre team. I'm not trying to disparage Dwayne Bacon. I think that there is a, 5% chance that he could become a starter, a reliable starter on a team. But that's great for where Dwayne Bacon is in his career. And, we're giving people time that normally would not have time in a competitive NBA team.
Yeah, and I know that there's some appeal in his skill set because he can create his own shot, allegedly, because he can shoot. And by that, I mean he can shoot tough mid-range jump shots. But he's not good enough at that for you to lean on that. And so if he's a 12th man, like you said, which I agree with, you want them to have a complementary skill set. And Dwayne Bacon has an alpha skill set, but he doesn't have the talent to play with that alpha skill or that alpha mentality.
Sure, and I could totally see 3 years down the road, him developing some type of defense that would make him a reliable bench player. I don't know if it's going to happen on the Hornets.
Yeah, and the big issue, and the other thing I think that's been a problem for him is not so much the talent level, which we know, we're up and down about, but in fact, I don't think he plays the game with the approach that Borrego wants his players to play with. Like, he's not a particularly unselfish player. He's not a good passer. And then defensively, it's one thing to be bad at defense, but he looks very apathetic on that end. Like, Malik Monk is a bad defender and he gets blown by a lot, but he at least seems to try at points, even if he does get lost. Bacon's just kind of like, I just want to go get some buckets.
Yeah, the defense in general on this team, Jonathan, is I don't want to make it historical, like it's the worst I've seen, but it is really, really bad on the defensive end. And, the Raptors are the defending champions, but they made us look like it was a middle school team. They made it look like a middle school basketball team playing an NBA basketball team on the defensive end. Do you think that there's a different way to play these players, a different lineup that might help the defense? I know they've been playing Biombo more. I don't know if that's your, if you're bringing in Biombo to solve any type of problem, you're in a bad way. MKG has gotten a few more minutes, but not very many. Is there a solution here? Should there be a solution?
So for one, to give credit to Biz, he's actually played played way above my expectations this year. Like, I wrote the preview for him this season and was like, yeah, Biz is here for now. Probably very temporarily, and he's like, and he's actually been like a useful rotation player. And this, like, I think
I remember that was the 9-9 word preview on Bismack Biyombo, right?
Yeah, he's here. Yeah. But like, you could argue, I think that this has been like the best season of his career. Not statistically, and I can't speak for specifically when he played in Toronto and Orlando, but from watching Biz both in his first couple years and then since he's been consistently competent, I've seen him play. I mean, we've seen him twice steal the ball at half court and dribble in for dunks. That's three times as many as I've seen him do that before, or twice as much as I've seen him do that before.
I mean, the Raptors game was probably his best game of the season. He was the only plus player for the Hornets on the court, 13 points, 5 of 7 from the field, and he looked like he knew what he was doing in the game. versus everyone else on the Hornets. It's a big caveat, you know?
Literally everyone else, yeah. Oh, Biz is averaging a career high in scoring this year, actually. But to answer your question about is there a way to make this defense better, I think the only way this defense is better is if you have a lineup that's like Terry Rozier, Nicholas Batum, Michael Kidd, like the starting lineup we had in like 2016 with Rozier in place of Kemba.
Yeah, but that does slow it all the way down.
Yeah, if you basically go back to Steve Clifford,
22 seconds of every
And I so much point in that. Like the offense would also suffer, but it's also like that's not the direction of this team. Like you play the vets and they can be a unit and they understand NBA defense, but that's not helping anything long term. And that's the whole point of this season is to set the team up for long term success.
So does that mean that in Borrego's system, that although we're shooting more three-pointers, scoring more points, it is a personnel problem that we don't have a defense? Or do you think that the system doesn't lend itself to good defense?
I think it's hard to tell. I think no matter what kind of system we ran, it would be hard to have a good defense with who we have, just because we're playing so many young players, and young players are always bad at defense, no matter how physically talented they are. And I don't know, because I don't know what Borrego teaches on the defensive end as much as like Clifford, because Clifford was more open and there was more like direct quotes about what it's hard to say what the principles are specifically, but it doesn't seem as much like the problems are like, oh, this Miles Bridges can't stay in front of anybody and Cody Zeller does get pushed around a bit, but it's not to the extent that people say. It seems more like, oh, somebody's too slow to rotate, or a player missed their assignment, or they didn't help the helper and stuff like that. Like everybody's being a step too slow with their assignments, particularly when the ball moves around the perimeter, like off passes and driving kicks and stuff like that. So I think it's just a mental thing from youth.
I hope you're right. I hope that when they evolve, when we get different players in here, I'm worried that Borrego's system will never lend to a good defense.
Like he just doesn't coach defense well.
Yeah, or that the way that you're spreading the court doesn't lend very well to transition defense and then being able to stop the ball at the half court. And the players that you need to play that spread offense is hard to translate onto the defensive end. And it all changes. So if you're the Warriors, you have a generational defensive talent in Draymond. So if you have a defensive talent on a spread offense team, I think you can handle it. You know, it's all right that you have Steph Curry because you have Draymond. There's not even a light at the end of tunnel defensive player on the Hornets as we're talking right now, you know?
Yeah, there's potential in a lot of guys, but none of them have really, they're not there yet.
No.
Like we talk about Bridges in his flashes he's shown as an on-ball defender, but he gets lost just as much as anybody else at rotating and closing out and stuff like that. So I'm optimistic because Borrego seems like he knows what he's doing. I think because we have the team overachieving with who's on the roster. So I'm hoping that translates to the defensive end too, as the talent gets better and as they get more experienced.
I agree with you. Just keep drinking your kombuchas. Keep watching the Phoenix Suns or, you know, the Toronto Raptors. Just stay off my lane, cool kids. You know what I mean?
The Hornets are our thing.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. We got Who's Buzzing and Wasn't and a preview for next week's game coming up right after this ad.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the At the Hive podcast. It's time for Who's Buzzing and Who Wasn't. I'm going to start, Zach. Yeah, I'm going to start. My first buzzing is, I have a couple candidates. I'm sorry if I steal from you. but I'm going to go with Malik Monk.
Oh, that was my buzzing from last pod.
Yeah, so he's kept it
really
up.
Showed out. Yeah, he has.
And I like Malik Monk. When Malik Monk does good things, there's always this like fear that like, well, we've seen this before, but you need to do it more than once in like a 3-week span. And before Monday night's game against the Raptors, which we're just not going to count because everybody played poorly, Malik Monk played well for an extended stretch of games. And that's with him struggling to shoot from three. I never thought I would have that. I never thought I'd say that or we'd be in this position.
No, but he's doing the extra things, the things that he never did in his first couple years with the Hornets. I mean, you're talking about being one of the people, few people on the team who's been rebounding consistently, and then the assists, finding the open man. He's really been fitting well with the Borrego offense.
Yeah, he led the team in rebounds in back-to-back games against the 76ers and the Grizzlies, which don't think very many people saw that coming.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's a low bar, but it's nice to see that he's doing the extra things, especially when, like you said, he's not hitting from the outside as you would want him to.
Yeah, so that's, I think, extra impressive that he's playing well without doing the thing he was supposed to do best. Who is your first, or who is your buzzing person?
Sure, my buzzing candidate is going to be the most obvious candidate because he's just really lit NBA Twitter on fire. He's really become the person that people talk about. I've seen articles on The Ringer about him. Devontae Graham is just having himself a season. And it's so fun to see how joyous he is on the court when he's playing well. You mm-hmm. see little baby Kemba moves in his game as well. The way Kemba talked about Devontae when they played Boston. And it's really good to see. I think there's going to be a wall sometime in the season that he's going to hit and where he's going to play starting players and he's not going to be able to find the corners he's been able to find, but it's just been fun to watch Devontae grow into the player that he's become.
How, like, what were your expectations for him coming into the season? Like, how far has he exceeded your expectations?
You know me. I you could figure that he would not be, there's a version of the season that would go, he would not be on the team by the end of the season. This guy, I mean, this is an actual rags to riches, you know, rose in the concrete kind of player. When he was first drafted, there was almost no time for him. There was almost, you know, he had to invest in himself to get where he is today. And that's why I really like him as a player. Especially if you give the contrast to Terry Rozier with the contract that he got and the way the two have been playing, you know, it's unfair to put them in contrast, but you kind of have to because they're both point guards on the same team. And Devontae Graham has just been really lights out, and I love his energy. And when you're contrasting it with the Terry Rozier energy, it's just two totally different people who approach the same position in different ways.
He has very quickly become like my favorite player on this team. At media day, he was asked like what his goals were for the season. Like, I'm gonna play my position well. I want to shoot the ball better, and I want to have fun. And I was like, oh, that's such a Devontae Graham answer now. Seeing like who he's grown into as a player, and just like how he handles all of his post game interviews and stuff. He just seems like a kid out there having fun playing basketball. Like he's not too big for the moment. The moment's not too big for him. None of that stuff.
For sure, and when you think about leaders on this team, you have to count Devontae Graham as one of them.
Yeah, but great choice. I thought about saying him, but yeah.
I know it's the obvious choice, but I mean, you have to pick the person that's obvious when the contrast is this big, you know?
He's averaging 18 points and 7 assists per game, which is like, that's ahead of where Kemba Walker was at this point in his career. Just saying.
And the buzzer beater, and just... like you said, the happiness and the joy with which he plays, it's fun to, he's one of the reasons why the Hornets have been fun to watch.
Are both of our buzzing candidates beating the buzz?
Yeah.
Last couple of games. And my other, who's buzzing, is just the Hornets in general. We kind of talked about it before. Everybody's like talking about the Hornets in a national light, and I know you don't like it.
Get off my yard.
Apparently NBA, like, they did their top 10 plays of the week, and the Hornets got number 3 and number 1 in that play highlight package. It's just, and people are recognizing what Devontae Graham's doing. They're recognizing what the Hornets are doing, and they're recognizing how fun the Hornets are. And so there's some buzz around the Hornets.
Thank God for Toronto putting us in our place, giving us that little 35-point loss. It's good to – I like the wins. I like the buzzer beaters. It's good to make sure we don't get too much gravy in our turkey. You know what I mean?
Yes, I understand completely. All right, do you have, who do you have for who's? How many people do you have for who's wasn't?
Got one wasn't, but it's kind of a general wasn't because I'm putting
What's that?
Everybody on the Hornets on my wasn't for the lack of rebounding on this team. We
That is a problem.
Dead last in the league in rebounding, and our defense is not good, and it is compounded by the fact that we can't get rebounds on the defensive end either. And teams are not interested in getting offensive rebounds. They're interested in getting back on defense. They're interested in spreading the floor. And the Charlotte Hornets, it tells the tale that that Nicholas Batum gets back onto the court and can lead the team in rebounds out of nowhere. The big guys there, even the big guys who are performing well, seem to have no interest in rebounds. And I need Dennis Rodman to come out of retirement and just play, call it 4.5 minutes so that I can see some rebounds on this team.
The Hornets are reeling in 47.7% of rebound opportunities this season, both offensively and defensively, which is, like you said, dead last in the league.
It's just, it can't continue, I don't think. Even if you think about it as like, hey, this is a spread offense, we're not concerned about rebounding, you have to at least rebound at a better.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I get it. You're not interested in rebounding either. That's fine. I put everybody to sleep. I'm just saying we need more rebounds.
I remember I researched this a while ago because Steve Clifford was a big proponent in getting back on defense and not worrying about offensive rebounding. And I think rebounding to a point can be an overrated stat, like running the football in the NFL. But there is so bad or so good at it, it does matter. Like, if you're in the middle range, it doesn't matter if you're, like, kind of good or kind of bad. It's all kind of the same. But if you're really, really bad, it does really hinder your team. And that's where the Hornets are at this point.
You're against football teams running the football? This isn't even a football podcast, and I'm already upset with you about that.
Oh, if you listen to me on Cat Scratch Reader, because I'm on the Keep Sounding podcast, Cat Scratch Reader, and I write stuff over there, I'm a big proponent in running the football is not that important. But this isn't the type of place for that. anyway, I have my who wasn't for the Hornets for the last few games has been Miles Bridges, which it hurts me to say because Miles Bridges, I'm a big Miles Bridges guy, as everybody probably knows at this point.
Yeah.
He put up a decent final line against the Raptors, but he got a couple buckets in garbage time. He was 0 for 8 against the Knicks, and he got benched in the second half. Pretty much, like, he played like 3 minutes in the second half, missed a couple shots, and Brego was like, all right, kid, you've had enough of this. Let's put Nick Batum in for the rest of the half. I guess the Pistons, he didn't shoot. Like, he took 6 shots in 25 minutes, was a minus 18. He just looks uncomfortable right now. I don't really know how to explain it. Like, he looks passive he looks passive at points, but then he has times where he's like, I need to be aggressive, and he forces the issue too much. And it's kind of like what we saw from him at the beginning of last year in his rookie year. And I'm hoping it's just a little slump and he'll get out of it. And I'm sure he will. But the last couple games haven't been very good to watch for him.
Uncomfortable is how I would describe his play. He doesn't exactly know where he fits in on this team, or hasn't for the past couple games. And I think that if he were to commit to the stat that you don't like at all, rebounding or being a defensive anchor on this team, you know, and being the explosive in the paint offensive player that we know he can be, if he found that kind of corner on this team, he could be indispensable. But I agree with you. His game has been suffering. I think as much as we've talked about PJ Washington on this podcast, I think the introduction of PJ Washington has really given him pause on where he belongs on this team. And I think that if he figures that out, P.J. Washington and Miles Bridges could definitely be the twin towers of the Hornets going forward. But he has to figure out the right way to play in the Borrego system.
Yeah, I do think Washington's presence has hindered him a little bit. Not that anything against Washington, and obviously Washington is earned the right to play. But it just that Washington's finding some buckets, like he's on dump-off passes and rolling to the basket and stuff that were more for Bridges last year when he played at power forward. And now Bridges is forced to play on the perimeter a little bit more, which I don't think suits his skill set best right now. He can get there. Right now, it fits him best to be like a small ball four, and he's not going to get a lot of minutes there with Washington playing as well as he is.
No, but I have faith he can figure it out.
Yeah, and I think Washington, as he gets more experience, can play more five. And if he plays more five, that opens up more minutes at Bridges for four, and so on and so forth. The other wasn't I have is kind of outdated at this point, but I thought it was really funny at the time. And it's a Dion Waiters for him. He wasn't because he was buzzing. Did you see the Dion Waiters story from like a week ago now?
No, what are you talking about? The
Dion Waiters got suspended for 10 games because he had a panic attack on the team plane.
Oh, the gummies.
Yeah,
the
gummies. I just wanted to talk about that because I think that's so funny, especially because it's Dion Waiters.
Like, I mean, what would you like to say about it? I just thought it was
funny. I wanted to bring it up. I thought he deserved a shout out.
Yeah,
category for buzzing.
Yeah, and to paraphrase Jalen and Jacoby, don't get fired, my friend. Don't do it.
to divert the team plane because you're having a panic attack because you ate some weed gummies allegedly from a teammate. Like that's the kind of NBA stories we live for.
Oh, for sure. And just the Dion Waiters whole drama. And even before that, he was getting in arguments with the coach and wasn't on the same page with the team. You know,
he's already
Dion Waiters, when he's right, can be an asset to a team, but he's not right a lot of the time.
Dion Waiters has been suspended more times, not just like the number of games, just the amount of suspensions handed to him, more than games played this year by two. He's played zero games this year, and he's been suspended on two separate occasions. That's impressive.
Oh, man, you think we can trade for him?
By low candidate, I think the Heat would give away assets to get rid of him at this point.
Oh my gosh.
All right, looking ahead, the Hornets have two more games on this road trip at Brooklyn, at Washington. Then they come home for one game against Chicago, which is basically another road game because they have to leave right away to go back out to Miami. I guess this looks like a chance for the Hornets to make people excited again. With Brooklyn will be without Kyrie Irving tonight, Wednesday night. Washington's bad and Chicago's bad. So there's three maybe wins for the Hornets right there.
Maybe wins indeed. I like the enthusiasm. I really do. I think we can win against the Wizards as long as we don't let Beal go off. The Nets are going to be without two of their really good players. That could possibly be a win. And I should be at the Hive on Saturday to watch them beat the Bulls for a second time this year.
I'm looking. Yeah, do you think it's possible that they win all three of those games? Not that they will, but do you think there's like a real non-zero possibility that the Hornets go on a three-game win streak again?
Oh, for sure. I mean, this is a perfect opportunity, like you were saying, to show that style of offense can overcome the defensive woes on the other side,
especially with the level of opponents, because the Nets have been. Even when Kyrie plays, and then Kyrie isn't playing, and they're not really doing any better. And then the Wizards, Bradley Beal's averaging 30 points a game, and the Wizards are 3-8, which shows how bad the rest of the team is around him.
Yeah, I will predict that if Beal plays, he'll get 40 points or more.
He'll score 45, and the rest of the Wizards will also score 45 combined.
Right.
And then the Bulls. We've seen the Bulls already, and the Bulls are also a train wreck because I think they have a terrible coach and. Their roster is just all sorts of mismatched parts. But we have to watch out for Coby White, because did you see what Coby White did? I think it was maybe a week ago at this point.
No, but I saw him how he played against the Hornets the first time, and he played really well.
He set the franchise record with, I think he made 7 three-pointers in the fourth quarter against the Knicks, maybe. Yeah, he scored. He made 7 3-pointers in the fourth quarter alone against the Knicks. So he can get hot.
And the Bulls have good young players. Like you said, I don't think the game plan is the right game plan. And they're also in the same rebuilding phase as the Hornets as well.
Yeah, they're not good. But I thought they would be like, and maybe they'll get there, but I thought they would be one of those teams kind of fighting for the worst or the best of the worst and maybe make the 8th seed or something like that. Because LaVine has put up all-star numbers. Markkanen looked like a potential all-star. Wendell Carter's supposed to be good. And then they have other style, like Thaddeus Young and Tomas Satoransky. And yet they're really bad. They shouldn't be this bad. They also have Otto Porter. Like, they should not be this bad.
I agree with you, but, you know, everybody comes in with a plan until they get hit in the face.
But, yeah, so, and then, like I said, the fourth game is at the Heat.
Gummy and bear that, waiters.
No Deion waiters for that game. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if that's a game where Jimmy Butler sits out for load management or injury management or something like that. But it's too far in advance to say for sure. But what out of those four games, what do you think the Hornets record is?
I'm going to do it. I'm going to say 4-0. I'm going to say surprise Miami Heat in Florida. They're not ready for it. They don't care. It's the weekend, so they went to a bunch of clubs on Saturday and Sunday. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And, I know what you mean.
And there's, I guess you could worry about the Bulls game because it's a back-to-back. But I'm not worried about it at all, my friend. We're going 4-0. We're going to be on the front page of The Ringer and on SB Nation. And just everybody's going to be on our spot. We're going to start getting tens of thousands of people listening to this podcast. Jonathan DeLong is going to be the biggest name in press sports in the nation. It's going to be crazy. 4-0. What do you think?
And you're going to hate all of it.
Oh my God, it's going to be the worst.
We're going to get back on the show and you're like, the Hornets have won 4 straight. And you're going to be like, this is awful.
Well, if they would just stay off the grass, you know, we're really trying to build the grass, seeding it, aerating it. Stay off my grass.
I'm going to go 2-2. There is no rhyme or reason to when this team wins and loses games other than when they play a really good team that get the doors blown off of them. There are no really good teams on the schedule. I think they'll probably lose at the Heat, and then they'll probably drop one of these games, at least one of these games, to the Nets and the Wizards just because they can't win that many in a row. I don't think they'll get another big win streak. So I'm going to go with 2-2, and they'll be 8-10. When we reconvene for next week's episode and a doubleheader against the Pistons, which is super fun.
That's going to be, let me tell you, I can't believe that's not on national television. The doubleheader against the Pistons. That's fine, hater. I'm saying they're going to go 4-0. I have faith that we can figure it out, especially because if you're going to have a back-to-back, having it against the Wizards and the Bulls is kind of best case scenario.
Yeah. If you're going to pick two teams to put in your back-to-back, they would definitely be up there.
That's it.
And then, like I said, real quick, there are a few things less exciting in the NBA than the Detroit Pistons, and I can't imagine anything less exciting than playing the Detroit Pistons. But that's what we're in store for next week.
Let's do it. I'm excited.
All right, guys. Thanks. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the At the Hive podcast. Once again, I'm Jonathan, and that's Zach. We will see you guys next week.
Peace out.